Shastra. Narada Muni said, Karma Nishtaha. Attached to ritualistic ceremonies. According to one's social status. As a Brahmin Kshatriya. Vaishya or Shudra. Dvijaha. The twice born. Especially the Brahmanas. Kechit. Some. Tapa Nishtaha. Very much attached to austerities and penances. Ripa. O King. Apare. Others. Swadhyaye. And studying Vedic literatures. Anye. Others. Pravachane. Delivering speeches on Vedic literature. Kechana. Some. Jnana Yoga Yoho. And culturing knowledge and practicing Bhakti Yoga. So translation. Narada Muni continued, My dear King, some Brahmanas are very much attached to fruitive activities, and some are attached to austerities and penances, and still others study the Vedic literature, whereas some, although very few, cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially Bhakti Yoga. So there's no purport to this text, so I'm just going to read the next text with its translation and purport, and then we'll comment a little bit. So text 2. Ajnana nishtaya deva yani kavyan yanta yantatyam ichchita daive chatar bhavishyad itarebhyo yatharhataha. A person desiring liberation for his forefathers or himself should give charity to a brahmana who adheres to impersonal monism, jnana nishta. In the absence of such an advanced brahmana, charity may be given to a brahmana addicted to fruitive activities, karma kanda. So Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, there are two processes by which to get free from material bondage. One involves jnana kanda and karma kanda, and the other involves upasana kanda. Vaishnavas never want to merge into the existence of the Supreme. Rather, they want to be everlastingly servants of the Lord, to render loving service unto Him. In this verse, the words anancham ichyata refer to persons who desire to achieve liberation from material bondage and merge into the existence of the Lord. Devotees, however, whose objective is to associate personally with the Lord, have no desire to accept the activities of karmakanda or jnanakanda. For pure devotional service is above both karmakanda and jnanakanda. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnana vritam. In pure devotional service, there is not even a pinch of jnana or karma. Consequently, when Vaishnavas distribute charity, they do not need to find a brahmana performing the activities of jnana kanda or karma kanda. The best example in this regard is provided by Advaita Goswami, who after performing the Shada ceremony for his father, offered charity to Haridas Thakur. Although it was known to everyone that Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family, not a Brahmana family, and was not interested in the activities of jnana kanda or karma kanda. Charity, therefore, should be given to the first-class transcendentalist, the devotee, because the Shastras recommend muktanam api siranam narayana parayanaha. sudurlabhava-shandhatma kotishvapi maha-mune. O great sage, among many millions who were liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayan or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. This is from the Bhagavatam 6th canto, 14th chapter, text 5. A Vaishnava is in a higher position than a jnani, and therefore Advaitacharya selected Haridas Thakur to be the person to accept his charity. The Supreme Lord also says, Name bhaktas taturvedi, mud bhaktas rapacha priyaha, tasmai deyam tato grayam, sacha pujo yata hiyam. Even though a person is a very learned scholar of the Sanskrit Vedic literatures, he is not accepted as my devotee unless he is pure in devotional service. However, though a person is born in a family of dog-eaters, he is very dear to me if he is a pure devotee who has no motive to enjoy fruit of activity or mental speculation. Indeed, all respect should be given to him, and whatever he offers should be accepted. Such devotees are as worshipable as I am. This is from the Hari Bhakti Vilas 10.127. Therefore, even if not born in a Brahmin family, a devotee, because of his devotion to the Lord, is above all kinds of Brahmanas, whether they be Karmakanda or Jnanakandis. In this regard, it may be mentioned that Brahmanas in Vrindavan, who are Karmakandis and Jnanakandis, sometimes decline to accept invitations to our temple because our temple is known as the Angareji Temple or Anglican Temple. But in accordance with the evidence given in the Shastra and the example set by Advaitacharya, we give prasad to devotees regardless of whether they come from India, Europe, or America. It is the conclusion of the Shastra that instead of feeding many Jnanakandi or Karmakandi Brahmanas, it is better to feed a pure Vaishnava, regardless of where he comes from. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text 30. Apichet surachiro bhajate mam ananya bhak sarureva samantav ya samyag vya vasito hisaha. Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. Thus, it doesn't matter whether a devotee comes from a Brahmin family or non-Brahmin family. If he is fully devoted to Krishna, he is a sadhu. Om ganata mirandasya gananjana shilakaya chakshur unbiditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha shri Prabhupada jai. So, in this regard, I was just recently reading the Jiva Dharma by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The Jiva Dharma is the treatise written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Treatise means like a very long book that includes like practically every aspect of Krishna consciousness in this particular regard, beginning with Sambandha, and then going to Abhideya, and then Prayojana. Sambandha, of course, means to understand the jiva's relationship with Krishna, to understand Krishna's relationship with the material energy, and to understand the jiva's relationship. What's that? You need to turn it up?
It's low sound.
All right. I can speak closer, but it gets too bassy. And to understand the jiva's relationship with maya. So that's sambandha. Basically, sambandha, God. And it's interesting, because we're also having this discussion on the internet. The initiating guru is representative of the person who gives sambandha jnana. And then there's Abhideya Gyan, that means knowledge, how to engage in devotional service, how to go back to Godhead, that's Sadhana Bhakti. After that, you got Bhava Bhakti, and after that, you got Prema Bhakti. Because that's the instructing guru. You understand? It's interesting. is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then after that, you have Prayojana-gyan. Prayojana means, basically, going back to the spiritual world, what happens there, which is really nice, because that's our goal. Prayojana means the goal. Prema Prayojana, that's the goal. That's Panchama Purusharta, the fifth goal of human life. So, anyway, getting back to the point. So there's this whole discussion in the Jiva Dharma about these different subject matters. It's told in terms of stories, interactions between devotees and non-devotees. So there's this one personality who came from a very high-class Brahmin family. His name was Kalidas Mahasaya. And by the influence of the Vaishnavas, and particularly Vaishnavas who were in the Babaji order of life. Babaji order means Uttama Adhikari. Of course, not all Babajis are Uttama Adhikaris. You can go to Vrindavan or other places and find Babajis who are not interested, or maybe they're interested in Krishna consciousness, but they're also interested in material things. So they're not Uttama Adhikaris. But traditionally, a Babaji had to be one who is completely renounced, nirapeksha, means disinterested. That's higher than Varnashram. Actually, the Babaji order is, one sense they say it's part of Varnashram, it's the Paramahamsa order, but actually it's even higher than Varnashram. Because in Varnashram you have brahmacharis, grahastas, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. And a pure Uttama Adhikari is actually higher even than that, than the sannyasi. Anyway. So this Kalidas, he was influenced by the Vaishnavas, and he became a Vaishnava, and he was chanting very nicely. He came from a pure Brahmin family. And so what happened is that his sons, he had two sons. One son was a ritualistic Brahmin, that's described here, like a Karmakanya Brahmin. And the other son was a doctor, because that's also a Brahminical activity. In India, the doctors were generally Brahmins, and it's not like nowadays that the doctors charge you so much money when you go to see them, like for an operation. They love to take out parts of your body so they can make money, right? They make more money. The more parts of the body they take out, the more money they make. So it's a very big business. Other businesses, they have to give you something for your money, but doctors are the opposite. They have to take something away from you. Anyway, enough of that. So what happened is that he had these two sons, and these two sons were really upset that their father had become a Vaishnava. Because as far as the Brahmanas are concerned, the Vaishnavas, you know, these ritualistic Brahmanas, you know, Karmakanda, Gyana kind of Vaishnavas, Brahmanas, These Vaishnavas are just like low class, and they hang out with low class people, and they dance and they chant, you know, they do all these wild things, and they stay up all night. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, some of the ritualistic Brahmanas say that we can understand when one's worshipping the goddess Chandi, that's Durga, then you can stay up all night and dancing and chanting, but normally you shouldn't be doing these things. So they criticize the Vaishnavas, because the Vaishnavas also hang out, as we hear in this purport. Dvaitacharya, he gave the Shraddhapatra, the plate from the Shraddha ceremony, which is supposed to be given to the most highest class Brahmana. He gave it to Haridas Thakur. So these Brahmanas, they get really upset. In fact, there's stories that when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was doing the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama with his disciples and some sannyasis amongst his disciples who were not from Brahmin class, and he was just mixing all the Brahmanas with what they called the Shudras and the even those who were outside the Varnashram system. They wanted to kill Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There was a whole plan by the Brahmanas to kill Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they even bribed the police chief. And the police chief went to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and he said, actually, we have no problems with taking bribes, especially in India. I was just reading the newspaper that 90% of people in India have either taken bribes or given bribes. So the police chief said, we have no problems with taking bribes and getting people killed, but you're a sadhu, so I'm warning you. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was able to escape with his life because one of his disciples put on his dress, the sannyas dress, and imitated him, and then he was saved. So the Brahmins, they just have this whole thing. And also, let's go back to a little Christian history, too. It was actually the Brahmanas in the Jewish tradition who arranged for the killing of Jesus Christ. Did you know that? These are called the Sadducees and the Pharisees. You don't have to remember that. It's not Sanskrit. But these are the, in the Jewish religion, they're the priestly caste. There's different tribes. Actually, it's interesting that even in the Jewish religion, there's different tribes. And each one of those tribes, you can read about that in the Bible. Each of those tribes has a different varna. You understand? So there's one tribe called the Kohanim tribe, which is the priestly caste. Just like I have one disciple who has that as his last name. Anyway, his name is Frank Cohen. So he's basically from that particular caste. But he's a devotee now. Some of you may know him, may have met him. His name is Gopal now. A very short person. And he still thinks he's a priest, but you know, that's really not his psychophysical nature. Anyway, he wants to be the boss all the time. Is anyone here? You met him, right? You met him. So he's, anyway. So getting back to the story of Jesus Christ, that you had all these priests who were very upset because Jesus Christ, basically what he was doing was overturning all the money changing tables at the temple and not allowing the lambs to be sold for sacrifice in the temple in Jerusalem, and interfering with the priest business, and also engaging people who were fishermen and preachers, right? If you know the Bible, you know about this. He said to some of his disciples who were fishermen, he said, instead of becoming fishermen, you should become the fisher of men, you know. In other words, fish for men. You understand? Fish for men instead of fish for fish. In other words, preach and make people Krishna conscious. I mean, he's a pure devotee. Prabhupada said he was Shaktiva Shavatar. So what happened is that basically he was captured by the Romans, but the Romans were ready to let him go. But it was these priestly caste who insisted that Jesus Christ be crucified because he was interfering with their priestly business. You know, their exclusive monopoly. You know what a monopoly is? There's also a game called Monopoly. Has anyone played that when they were young? No, you don't.
Yes, I like it very much.
You like it very much.
Yes.
I like it very much too. Because you can make money with the game. But it was all useless money. So the priests actually had this monopoly. And so they were very upset because Jesus Christ is bringing in all these people from other castes, basically. And they were preaching, you know, people who are fishermen, people who are farmers, just low class, you know, they weren't low class because they were devotees, like Peter and Paul and all these other personalities. Saint Peter, for example. And they later on became the saints of the Catholic or Christian Church. And so, as a result, he was killed. The Brahmanas insisted that he be killed. It's interesting, isn't it, this discrimination. So getting back to the story in the Jiva Dharma, which is a very interesting story, so you had something occurred that really aggravated these Brahmanas. So you had these two sons of Kalidas that we mentioned before, and they thought, we got to save our father from associating with these Vaishnavas. You know, free him, you know, our poor father. Actually, they weren't interested in their father. They were interested in their reputation. That's the point. They couldn't care less about their father. And actually, there's some stories also in the Jiva Dharma about, there's another story about a man and his wife who were sent on pilgrimage by their children, and they were sent on pilgrimage so the children could actually rob all the hidden money in their house. And a very interesting story. And later on they became pure Vaishnavas because they realized the children didn't love them. So, it's called fallible soldiers. You've heard of that expression before? Yeah, second canto. Fallible soldiers. Anyway, so these two personalities, they plan, how could we actually save our father? In other words, save our reputation. So they enlisted the help of their cousin, who was an expert in all the Vedic literatures. And they went to visit their father. They said, let's save our father. So they crossed. They were all living in Navadvip, the whole area. Navadvip means the nine islands, not just the city, you understand. So there was the whole area of Mayapur and Navadvip. So they crossed the river. It took about a half day. And they got to where their father was. Their father, who had previously been one of these ritualistic Brahmins, was basically living so austerely, it was embarrassing for them, because he had three dotis before. Interesting story. And in order not to be too opulent, he ripped, he gave away two and ripped one doti into three parts. Because it said one of the renowned sort of life shouldn't wear fine clothing and eat opulent food and everything like that. And also he would go out every day in Madhukari and beg from people. Madhukari means like a bee. They would beg one japati from one house or something like that. Not just 1,000 japatis from one house or one whole pizza from one house. It was basically a little from each house, and then that would be their meal. And he was sitting with all these Vaishnavas, wonderful Vaishnavas, some of who had previously been associated with Lord Nityananda or Lord Nityananda's associates or Chaitanya's associates. It's a wonderful story. We're going to be giving a seminar on it. That's why I'm thinking about it right now. And what happened is they saw something while they were sitting with the Vaishnavas that completely disturbed their minds. And it was bad enough, that's in their minds, that the Vaishnavas were associating with, you know, lower class Hindus. But then someone came to the association of the Vaishnavas that blew their minds. You ever hear that expression, blowing someone's mind? That's an English expression. Does everyone know what that means? It doesn't mean boom. It's something from the 1960s, from the hippie era. You really blew my mind. Something like so, unbelievable, fantastic, or horrible. It's just like, I never expected it to happen. So what happened is the Muslim Qazi came to visit the Vaishnavas. Very interesting. And anyway, so he came to visit the Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas offered him respect. This Qazi happened to be the descendant of the Qazi that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu interacted with. Remember that story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat? That Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had this non-violent protest because the Qazi had some mridanga drums broken and interfered with Sankirtan, and the Qazi actually became a Vaishnava after that point. So this was like his son or descendant. So anyway, so this descendant of the original Qazi, the Adi Qazi, Sanskrit, came, and he sat down with the Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas gave him a place of respect, and they started talking about spirituality and how different words in Arabic are equivalent to certain words in Sanskrit, or certain concepts like the soul of God, eternal relationship with God. So they were actually having this interreligious dialogue, a really fantastic interreligious dialogue, because the Qazi was a Vaishnava. That's interesting, isn't it? Because generally we think Vaishnavas have to be members of the Krishna consciousness movement. And we're the only Vaishnavas on the planet. It's not true. Actually, there's many Vaishnavas. And Vaishnava doesn't mean only those who worship Vishnu. It means basically those who worship God, but with the understanding of anyavi lashita shunyam jnana karma anavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutamam. That giving up desire for liberation, desire for fruit of gain, it means enjoyment in this world, and serving Krishna favorably with a nice spirit and in an active way. That's Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. So you have Vaishnavas who are members of different religions. The traditions are a little bit different. They may not dress in a dhoti. They may have a turban on. Or they may have tilak or no tilak. They may have tilak that's bigger than us, you know, like the Ramanuja Vaishnavas. They may have a sika that's so big it encompasses the whole head. Actually, Prabhupada said one time a devotee had this really long, big sika. Prabhupada said it's another sampradaya. So we should stick with normal sikhas. You understand? Normal sikhas means, like Prabhupada said, about this big around. Any bigger, of course, you ladies, you're not of the same sampradaya because you have bigger sikhas. But that's just a joke. You know, don't take that. You know, I got to be careful here. People take me seriously sometimes. They think, the Guru Maharaj said the ladies aren't members of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Take things out of context, you can really be in trouble. So Prabhupada said anyone with a bigger sika is not a member, you know, that's not a sika of our sampradaya. Our sampradaya is about this big, you know, there'll be a little variation. Of course, Prabhupada had very tiny sika. That's because when you get older, the hair starts to go away. You understand? So it's not possible to grow a bigger sika when you get older. So this Qazi obviously did not have a sika. He was a Qazi, and he had a beard like Muslims have. Prabhupada said something funny about Muslims' beard. He said, if eating jackfruit is like drinking sugarcane juice through a Muslim's beard. One funny thing Prabhupada said. Anyway, the Muslim had a beard on him. And he was a Vaishnava, and the devotees were very respectful, you know, they were all interacting with each other, sharing food with each other. And these ritualistic brahmanas, as I said, the sons of Kalidas, and the son and the nephew of Kalidas, because not both sons came at that time, they brought the nephew who was expert in ritualistic behavior. They were just going, what's happening here? Oh my God, these Vaishnavas, they're so damn low class. I mean, it's unbelievable. And so, after the Muslim Qazi left, then these two personalities, they said, what's happening here? And then there was some discussion, and basically, they defeated these personalities, because these personalities made the point that even if you have the water from a Muslim's water pot thrown on you, become a Muslim. What to speak of sitting down, eating with a Muslim. What to sit, making friendship with a Muslim. They're making all these points because in accordance with Brahminical standards, and we're talking about materialistic Brahminical standards, you're not supposed to eat in someone's house who's not a Brahmin. Basically, you're almost not supposed to talk. If a Shudra steps on your shadow, he should be killed. I mean, there's all these injunctions. Can you imagine that? Because you're not supposed to step on the guru's shadow, but what can you do? That means nobody could ever go for a walk with the spiritual master. Watch out for his shadow, Gurudev's shadow. You couldn't concentrate on your job if you were thinking like that. I mean, I went for walks with Prabhupada. I'm sure I stepped on his shadow from time to time. I mean, what can you do? Also walked in his footprints. So anyway, and I ate his footprints. So they were just like appalled by the whole situation and just thinking these Vaishnavas are hopeless. And they started to preach to their father and or uncle, because there was a nephew there too. And basically they were defeated. The reason they were defeated is interesting, is that they had a discussion with another Vaishnava who was there. His name was Vaishnava Das, who previously was a Mayavadi sannyasi, and he had mastered all the Vedic literatures. You know, most of the Vaishnavas, they weren't interested in learning the Karmakanda section, the Gyanakanda section, and, you know, all these different sacrifices. Like Prabhupada, I told this story while I was giving an initiation, right before the fire sacrifice. Like Prabhupada was talking about a fire sacrifice with one of his devotees, and the devotees said, should we chant the Purusha Shukta during the sacrifice? And Prabhupada said, no, just chant Hare Krishna, that takes care of everything. So Prabhupada was like that. If he's a pure Vaishnava, he's just not interested in any of these different ritualistic things. Sometimes people ask, why does the Hari Bhakti Vilas have a lot of ritualistic things in it? And Prabhupada said that was to satisfy the brahmanas. Not that we have to follow all those different aspects in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, only the aspects which our acharya has taught us to follow. The reason being, because the brahmanas, they were attached to very strict rituals, and in order to attract them, you had to package Krishna consciousness in such a way that they would join. Just like if we're going to distribute prasadam, it's easier to distribute prasadam that people can relate to. Like if you go out in the street and you start passing out gulab jamuns to everybody. I gave this example the other day. You know, gulab jamun that's dripping with sugar juice. Deadly. Prabhupada even called it an ISKCON bullet. And I really understood the purport of that 10 years ago more than anything. You know, bullets are meant to kill. So, high sugar. So, it's part of my health seminar. So, anyway, so imagine you go out there with glove jamuns and you go out to someone in the street, you know, and Sankirtan, you hand them a greasy, dripping glove jamun. Here, some prasad. You. What's that? So they're not likely to eat it. As soon as you walk away, they're going to throw it in the bushes, probably. So if you want them to eat it, eat prasadam, you give them a cookie or something they can relate to, right? It's like I have one disciple in Finland who makes thousands and thousands of euros just by passing out cookies. He lives in Mayapur most of the time. Some of you may have met him. Anyway, I'm not going to mention who it is. But, you know, and because people love cookies. But if he gave out gulab jamuns, nobody would buy any. So therefore the Hari Bhakti Vilas has all these different rituals and everything in it to attract the brahmanas. Like you have this thing about don't eat carrots. Did you know that in the Hari Bhakti Vilas? Yet Prabhupada gave us so many carrot preparations, and carrots are healthy. If you want to have good eyes, you eat carrots. Because in the brahmanas, one of the reasons they don't eat carrots is, in addition to them being a root vegetable, because they also have a bias against that. They consider the carrots, because it's red in India, to be the blood and the bones of the sages. Eek. And so that's a ritual. It's not actually the blood and the bones of the sage. I mean, I've eaten it many times and I haven't broken any regulated principles. I haven't become a rakshasa by eating a carrot. Isn't it? Yeah. The sage's bones. So, therefore you have all these rituals to attract them. So, anyway. So that's the brahmana. So, anyway, getting back to the point is that, in order to defeat the, nephew and the son of, this Kalidas, it was required to have someone who knew all the rituals ready. You know, if you just have like one simple Vaishnava, pure Vaishnava, like Prabhupada, he told us that he wasn't so expert in all the rituals. Like Prabhupada was asked sometimes, like, what about this ritual, what about that ritual? Prabhupada said, just ask my god brothers, they'll tell you. Like, but he said it in such a way that said, you know, if you want to learn, you learn it, but you know, don't bother me with it. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. So, but some devotees are attracted to it. If we find devotees attracted, let them engage their propensity and be ritualistic. That's fine. But, you know, as far as myself, I like the KISS philosophy. Keep it simple, sadhu. Of course, there's another, the last S also has another meaning to it. But anyway, keep it simple, sadhu. You understand? Keep it simple, sadhu. Because we chant Hare Krishna. I mean, basically, Lord Chaitanya said to Prakasananda Saraswati in the Mayavadis that my spiritual master called me a fool and told me just to chant Hare Krishna. But unfortunately, we're thinking we're more intelligent. Very, very intelligent. And we're too intelligent for our own good sometimes. So anyway, so yes, just by chanting Hare Krishna, one can become perfect. That's Yuga Dharma. If any of you haven't figured that out, being members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, I learned that a long time ago. Simply chant Hare Krishna. So anyway, so getting back to the point. So they have to... They had to have a philosophical discussion with someone who knew all the details and rituals. So there was this devotee, Vaishnava Das, who previously was a ritualistic sannyasi in Varanasi. Varanasi is the place where all the Mayavadis go to have their sangha. They have their summer camp there. And they all, instead of kirtan, they just chant the Vedanta and tell everybody, hum brahmasmi. It's a pretty miserable summer camp, isn't it? Can you imagine? It's, you know, it's not like Frushka Gauranga. It's like, anyway, it's without Gauranga and it's out without Frushka. It's not fresh. And there's no Gauranga there. It's just like dry. Actually, it's like a desert. Yeah, my body philosophy is like a desert, like the Sahara Desert or someplace like that. Even I was told that there's a desert in Serbia somewhere. Some portion of Serbia. Anyway, some of you may know this. So they were having, he was accustomed to attending the, Asat Sangha, non-Vaishnava summer camp in Varanasi for many years. He was an older sannyasi, you know, sannyasi as part of the Varanashram system. So he learned all these things. He was expert in all the different Vedic literatures. You know, it didn't matter. And so, the other Vaishnavas, when it came time to have a discussion with the Karmakanda Brahmanas, who was the son and the nephew of this Kalidas, they called for Vaishnavadas. He said, please come here. And Vaishnavadas just like, really just like wrapped them around his little finger, so to speak. In a humble way. He didn't say, I know all the philosophy. He just said, by the mercy of my gurus, I'm speaking. Because he had given up all that karmakanda stuff, but he knew it. So sometimes we can use information that we had from before the Krishna Conscious Movement, or even what's called in the Jiva Dharma, Naimitika Dharma, that means like temporary Dharma of this world, to try to convince people about Krishna Consciousness. I mean, sometimes, but we don't want to throw pearls before swine. In other words, you don't want to tell people about the deep philosophy of chanting Hare Krishna when they're going to commit offenses. But if someone comes with an offensive attitude, you have to defend yourself. Like this case, these two people, they came with an offensive attitude. They were criticizing the Vaishnavas for associating with the Qazi. They were criticizing the Vaishnavas for just being Vaishnavas and not doing the sanjas, that means the different rituals that people do it, the different three different times of the day. You know, morning, noon, and evening. They were criticizing. So they had to defend. So this Vaishnava Das, he really just defended them and defeated these ritualistic brahmanas. Then the ritualistic brahmanas lost all hope of convincing Kalidas to come back with them. And they left. And Kalidas lived happily ever after. Nice story, isn't it? So that's in the Jiva Dharma. One story. There's actually so many stories in the Jiva Dharma. So, of course, in India, you run into these ritualistic brahmanas. Some of them, one point, they said to some of Prabhupada's disciples that if you really serve this movement nicely in the next life, you'll get an opportunity to be born as a ritualistic brahmana. You know, this way they were insulting the movement and Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you can talk to these ritualistic brahmanas and tell them if they do their ritualistic brahmana stuff nicely, in the next life they'll get a chance to join the Hare Krishna movement. So you still find this around. And in Krishna's time, 5,000 years ago, you had these ritualistic brahmanas who, when Krishna and Balaram, through the coward boys, asked for something to eat, they refused to give it to them. Not only refused to give Krishna and Balaram something to eat, but they ignored the coward boys. And on the other hand, you had their wives, who when they found out that Krishna and Balaram were hungry, their wives ignored their husbands. We're not advocating this. And neither should husbands ignore their wives. Someone was just telling me yesterday that if you want to have a happy marriage, after 3 minutes you should agree with everything your wife says. There's a hint. You say, after 3 minutes you say, yes, you're right, yes, you're right, yes, you're right. So, but in this particular case,
for those of you who are thinking of getting married. So, in this particular case, the wives ignored their husbands. And they just took all the ingredients from the sacrifice and brought it to Krishna and Balaram to eat. And they were so attracted to Krishna and Balaram, they didn't even want to go back to their husbands. Of course, Krishna and Balaram said, go back to your husbands and remember us. They even had the conjugal attraction to Krishna at that point. And even after that, even if their husbands understood that their wives were more exalted than them, their husbands still didn't have the faith to go see Krishna and Balaram. You understand? They were afraid of Kamsa. It's described in the Krishna book like that. So who is higher? You know, generally you hear this whole chauvinistic thing. Oh, the women are low, we the men are higher. Isn't it? Sometimes people talk like that. And so who is higher? Higher is the person who has the most devotion for Krishna. Krishna consciousness is above these bodily distinctions. You know, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or even if someone is a Muslim. It's actually transcendental to all these things if they're engaged in pure devotional service. That's a really important point to understand. So we should see like that in our Krishna conscious movement. Although it's also mentioned in the Jiva Dharma, for social etiquette, we should follow items of social etiquette. Sometimes we have to be aware of Naimatika Dharma. That means the temporary dharmas that even in Varnashram. And Prabhupada did want us to establish Varnashram to save the world, because most people are not on the level of Vaishnavas. So, anyway, so these are some of the points. Any questions or comments about these things? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, discussions, politics? Oh, no. Yeah.
But does materialistic Brahmins, most of them are karma kandis, or they have like worship, I don't know. I mean, what's their goal?
Their goal is to acquire the swarga.
Swarga.
Heaven, that's the karma kandis. Now the jnana kandis, their goal is liberation. And sometimes they have this invented panchu pashana. They have these five deities that they worship. In order to get liberated, Panchu Pashana is called. And it's just invented, and they don't really believe in the deities, it's just like a method. Or maybe they even worship Vishnu, but just to give up Vishnu later on, so they can become liberated. I mean, there's all these different, there's many different varieties of...
They're not personless.
You know, people who worship God for the purpose of becoming liberated, and later on you give up the conception of God, are impersonalists. But sometimes karmakanda brahmanas may be like kanishtas or something like that, equivalent to a little bit to kanishtas, kanishtadikaris. There's different varieties of different of brahmanas like that. So, any other questions? Yes, you have a question.
I have read that some journalist in the media on the internet. They said that the Jnanis would save the world. But I remember Gandhi, he said, I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christianity, because in the world today is very bad situation, because people don't do good thing, nice thing. Mm. There are so little volunteers and so little good things. And I think we should everybody got to do bhakti yoga. Mm. And I think if we'll ever could to wake up. Paramatma, even a little, maybe we could save some men.
Yes. Yeah, as far as Christianity is concerned, Jesus Christ gave this golden rule. Anyone heard of the golden rule before? No?
See, the other men like
yeah.
you.
Yeah, basically, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Instead, people, you know, have this other rule, do unto others before they do it to you. You understand? That's the rule people follow now. Do unto others. Anyway, so, yeah, so Christ preached something. I mean, that's really seen everybody's parts of Krishna, para dukkha dukkhi, you know. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. It's a golden rule. Actually, that's from the Old Testament, but Christ also preached that. It was the rule of Hillel from the Old Testament. So anyway, yes, if people follow Christianity, that's Vaishnavism. But people don't. I mean, people probably call it churchianity. So that means institutionalization. So we have to be careful of templeianity. You understand? Like becoming so institutionalized, members of an institution, that we lose the soul of Krishna consciousness. That's really what the danger is. When you become big, in the beginning, it's easy to keep the soul because you're just a few brahmacharis living in a van. I remember the early days of the movement. I mean, it's pretty easy to keep the spirit in the early days. And we were all just simple people, you know, no gurus, no sannyasis, you know, very few sannyasis. And there was Prabhupada, so all of us were just humble at that time. Later on, as the movement progressed, you know, you get more opulence, position, big seats. You know, I never dreamed of sitting on a seat like this before, you know. Before, if I gave class, and I gave class after 6 months in the movement, I would sit on the floor, or in a cushion like that. So now we have a big seat, and recently at the summer camp, the seat got so big that nobody could move it. So the reason Vyasa-san was so big, it'd probably take a truck with a forklift. You know what a forklift is? To put it on the truck. So, but not that big, so I'm exaggerating. But, so when the movement progresses, then you get big buildings. I mean, in the beginning days, we just had rented buildings. And, just a house, basically. And the house was so old in the beginning days when we had kirtans, the shape of the windows would change. On the first floor, because the temple was on the second floor. You understand? And on the first floor was the kitchen, so I would be down in the kitchen watching the windows change shape as people were jumping up and down. And it was rented, and we hardly had money to pay the rent. And sometimes in order to get boga, we had to go into something called dumpsters. Do you know what a dumpster is? A dumpster is these big containers behind supermarkets where they throw out all the food they can't sell. You understand what I'm talking about? Big garbage pails. Not pails, but you know. I don't know what you call them in Croatian. You're sure you have some.
Container.
But it's big. The trucks, they're so big, the trucks have to come with special forks and lift it and put it into the garbage. So we used to have to dive into those. Because many times it had good produce. Because some of the things they wouldn't sell just because it had a little speck or something on it. And so we got nice melons, you know, watermelons, cantaloupes. It was delicious. Bananas, tons of bananas. We got, and so, you know, kept us humble doing that. And, you know, there was no question of anyone with credit cards or mobile phones. What to speak of mobile phones? Oh my God. We barely had a phone in the temple. And basically, if any sannyasi visited the temple, we had to disconnect the phone. Because the sannyasi would make so many calls. You understand? That the phone bill would be too high. So we just had to tell if a sannyasi visited, there's no phone in the temple. So that was the beginning days. But now we have so much more opulence, you know, summer camps and big cars and big dogs and everything, like in the Krishna concert. That's Prabhupada's joke. You know, so many big things. We didn't even have donies at that time. We just bought bed sheets from the store, you know, department store. And we wrapped the bed sheets on us. And that's saris too. That was the same thing. Not all these fancy things with borders on them, with little flowers and everything. You know, all the ladies, they have to have different saris. And they send their husband to India to buy 20 saris. you know, this is a blue day, this is a green day, this is a purple, this is a purple day.
Flower day.
Yeah, flower day. And then, you know, everybody just wore the same color every day. So things were, it was easy to remember the purpose of Krishna consciousness. And the only deities that we had were in the temple. It wasn't like you had 1,000 deities on the altar, Jaya Shri Shri Gaura-Nitai, in the temple. You would have, basically a picture of Gaura-Nitai and Panchatattva. It was nice. We didn't lack anything, so we remembered the mission. We were very much mission conscious, mission focused. But then, you know, then the institution grows and we get more opulence, the sannyasis with iPhones, like me. And then, iPads, iPhones, I, me, and mine. So, then we sort of forget, tend to forget the mission, isn't it? Riding, you know, even we didn't have cars, we had to hitchhike. You know what hitchhiking is? Mm-hmm. When we went on Sankirtan, we just had to put our thumb out. And we went on Sankirtan. But we didn't die. We're still here. And it was good for us. And we got sunshine, and it was nice. Of course, we ate a lot of sweets, too, but that's another issue. So, anyway, we don't want to forget the mission. So that's what happens. That's called churchianity or templeianity or Krishna consciousianity or insanity. So we don't want that to happen. So any other questions or comments? Yeah. Let's see.
At the end of, Maharaj, at the end of lecture, you said that it is not possible for anyone to become a Vaishnava.
A pure Vaishnava.
Yeah, okay.
They get
strictly pure Vaishnava?
Yeah, most people, the people can become Vaishnava Prayas or Kanishtha Adhikaris. But it's not possible. When we're talking about Vaishnava, I mean at least Majjhima or Uttama Adhikari. But it's like a Kanishtha is not really considered a Vaishnava. He's considered Vaishnava Praya or Chaya, like a shadow Vaishnava, like that. So it's not really possible, and nor even in the movement do we consider it possible for everyone to be like Majjhima Adhikari. But at least people can become Vaishnava in the sense that they accept the God, I mean the Vaishnava Praya at least, or chant God's names. In that way, yes, everybody can become at least Kanishtha Adhikari. So, any other questions? You had a question?
Thanks. Oh, sorry. Srila Prabhupada said that Christ and Krishna are the same person. And, in some texts, they said that Krishna could do very much, I don't know exactly now from Srimad Bhagavatam or where, do a lot of things that Christ couldn't do. For example, I remember all in past, in future, or etc. But Srimad Prabhupada said that they are the same person.
Well, let me explain. That's a little bit out of context.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada said the name of Christ.
Yes.
And the name of Krishna, the same linguistic derivation. There's a difference between saying they're the same person and saying, let me just get this thing, I'm just broadcasting because we've got about 15 people watching us. There's a difference between saying Christ and Krishna are the same person and saying the name linguistically is related. That's what Prabhupada meant. Yeah, like Christ said, in India sometimes they... Certain people in India, they instead of Krishna, say Krishna. And Krishna, and originally the name for Christ wasn't Christ, it was Christos. You understand? When you go to Greece, it's Christos. It's not Christ. And so Krishna, Krishna, Christos. Linguistically, I mean, it's the same.
Okay,
I mean.
Okay.
You know, it means the anointed person. Actually, Christ means the anointed person. Anointed means the appointed or the Shaktivesha avatar. Basically, that's what it means. And so they're different persons, but the name comes from the same place.
Root,
same root, yeah.
But how? Because Christus was from Greece.
Yeah, but in India, Krishna was, people call Krishna Krishna. And there's different names of Krishna. Krishna in India, they also Kana is like an interesting name for Krishna. That's like a village name, Kana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses that name in many of his works.
Sorry, you mentioned Christ, and so I asked.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But Christ is a avatar of Krishna. He's a Shaktivesha avatar. He's a jiva soul who came to teach about Krishna consciousness, but to people who couldn't hear everything. You know, he couldn't tell people that God plays a flute. I mean, they had enough trouble because he was interfering with their Brahmin business, you know, their religious business of making money. That was their main problem. He said, he basically said the first rule, in addition to, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself and do unto others as you would have others do unto you. He said, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and all thy might. You know, this is the same thing as Anyabhilashita Shunyam, as spoken in a very simple way. You've heard this before? You shall love the Lord thy God. They usually say this every Christian ceremony and even Jewish ceremonies. You should love the Lord thy God with all thy soul and all thy might. And these words which I command thee today shall be upon thy heart. You've ever heard this? Mm-hmm. And while thou walkest in the way, remember that?
Not remember, but I heard
it. It's interesting, I remember after 200 years. So, wish I could remember Krishna's pastimes so well. So, so what Jesus Christ taught is basically the same. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and all thy might. So any other questions? Yes.
Yesterday we had a Harinam.
Great.
It was a very nice point when one elderly nun approached and she gave a donation to the...
Wow.
And she was very happy to do it. She made a very elderly nun in a nunnery.
That's very nice. Yeah, we have, I have one disciple who's a monk in a Benedictine monastery. And he chants 16 rounds a day and worships Tulsi. I'm not sure if he still has Tulsi, but he was worshiping Tulsi. He's very old. I mean, not very old. He's old. He's only in his 80s. That's young. So, and then I have another disciple who, he works in a Muslim country. I told you about this. And, he chants his japa on the beads that the Muslims use. Because nobody can discover that he's a devotee. He's not Indian-based. He's actually, you know, Western-based person. So if they discover he's a devotee, what will happen is that he'll probably get put in jail, maybe killed, but at least he'll lose his wife and child. You know, it's a very serious situation. So his wife can't even find out he's a devotee. Can you imagine a situation like that? He has to just act, and he has to do his, you know, namaskars like the Muslims do, different times a day, and he has to observe Ramadan. He was asking me about that. He says, well, sometimes he may sneak a snack. You know, in the middle, he's a professor, actually, in the university, and he teaches, his duty is to teach mullahs, that means the Muslim people who are going to be Muslim priests, his duty is to train them up. What a story. I can't even tell you what country, because it's too dangerous for him. But, you know, you can be any one of these many, many Muslim countries. Can you imagine that? His duty is to train him up. But even stranger than that, one of the things he teaches is about other religions, so they can understand other religions. So he slipped in a little Krishna consciousness to them and had them read Prabhupada's Gita. That's really... Like Prabhupada, in the Ramayana, it says that Vibhishan was living like the tongue between the teeth. You understand? Vibhishan, who was the brother of Ravana. And Vibhishan's a good guy. You know, he was a devotee, a Ram Bhakta. And so living in such a situation with the Rakshasas is like living like the tongue between the teeth. You can get bitten at any time. So the same way this disciple, he get bitten at any time. Can you imagine that? We're so fortunate. I mean, we can just chant Hare Krishna. We're not worried about anything except for the neighbors. That's why whenever I come here, there's a reception. Everybody's inside because they're afraid the neighbors will come out, right? or complain. Sometimes the neighbors get upset. One time I was taking a walk on the street, up and down for some exercise. One of the neighbors came out like that, like a rakshasa. I went running back to the temple. Save me, save me. So, all right. Any other questions? We should end now because it's time for prasadam, right? Oh, you have a question, yeah. Because Krishna has ordained, question was, why is Ekadashi more important? Because Krishna has ordained that particular day as a special day to focus on hearing and chanting. And you get more benefits, like the month of Kartik or going to Vrindavan. That Krishna has just like arranged things so the devotees have this opportunity. Also Ekadashi, if you follow Ekadashi, it's better for your health too. Prabhupada made that comment. And we need from time to time some reminder. The reason Krishna's done that is that we need from time to time some sort of reminder about our purpose and goal in life. It's not simply a time to do physical austerities. That's really not the essence. That's a secondary quality of Ekadasi. When talking about anything, there's what's called mukhya and gona. We talked about this yesterday, remember? Mukhya means a primary quality, and gona means a secondary quality. So the primary quality, the essence of Ekadasi, is hearing and chanting and rededicating yourself to your spiritual life. Like I said, on Ekadasi, I like to chant 64 rounds. However, on Ekadasi, I generally don't fast the whole day. And, you know, I fast from grains and beans, obviously. I'm not a demon. Or maybe I am, but I'm pretending to be a devotee. So, but I chant 64 rounds. To me, and because I chant 64 rounds, and generally I'm walking while I'm chanting 64 rounds, I need energy, so I have to eat. So for me, it's more important to eat and chant 64 rounds than to fast and be too weak to chant 64 rounds. No. Because the 64 rounds is the primary quality, or the chanting and hearing is the primary quality of Ekadasi. And the fasting, that's a secondary aspect. But people reverse it. And ISKCON, a ritualistic Brahmin is they reverse it. Like there was one devotee who published a book, and he's no longer a member of ISKCON, about Ekadasi. And it's just filled with these ritualistic concepts that on this Ekadasi, you eat this or don't eat that. And it's so confusing. And all these different stories he had in there, there were people followed Ekadasi by accident and they went back to Godhead. You know, anyway, I'm not going to get into that, but, you know, just look at all the people in the coma in the hospital. You know what a coma is? In the hospital, it's not that if they're in coma during Nrisimha Chaturdasi, they'd go back to Godhead. You know, if it was, then we just gas everybody. Put them in a coma. <Isn't it? laughs> Or, you know, the whole thing, if one dies at a certain day of the month, so you just kill everybody that day, you know, you go back, like that cult with the Jim Jones cult, you heard about that before? No. They all took poison drink, and all go back to Godhead. I mean, if you want to go back to Godhead, you have to be a pure devotee. And you have to chant the holy names purely, on Ekadasi and other days too. But Ekadasi is a special day that Krishna reminds us, refocuses us on our goal. And that's how I take it. So on Ekadasi, you know, I try not to look at the news or do any of the nonsense I generally do. Not really. I mean, I'm doing those things for Krishna. But, you know, I won't do sporting activities on Ekadasi. I generally won't swim on Ekadasi and other things, you know, that I do for my health. I'll just chant, and I chant 64 rounds. And when last Ekadasi, I was in Sarajevo, and I took the devotees out on an Ekadasi walk. And we walked, I think, 25 kilometers or something like that. And, you know, we were all chanting, and we were happy. We walked in the park, it was nice and peaceful, and we chanted. Walked through the city, it was nice. So that's Ekadasi. It's a wonderful, we should look forward to it. And not, oh no, it's a codicil, I gotta give up eating or something like that. I mean, if you're thinking like that, you're not gonna get so much benefit anyway. If you see a codicil as an austerity, then it's really not gonna give you so much benefit. If you see it as something to really look forward to, I do. It's a relief. You know, I can get away from all this, you know, whatever politics or whatever else I have to do with my life. And I could just chant Hare Krishna and read. You know, for me, if I can get an opportunity to read Vaishnava literature and chant more, and not have the mobile phone ringing and people telling me how they're blooping for one day, I mean, that's like a vacation, isn't it? You know, have everybody throw their problems at me. I don't mind that other days, but Kadasi, you know, keep your problems to yourself. Just can't do a Monavrata. You know what a Monavrata is? All right. I think we have to end now because it's time. It's not a codicil. We have to eat. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada. Jai.